Perkei Avos, December 1, 1985. Perek Gimel.
There's a difference between Hashgacha Pratis and a Nes. Right? Now, there are a lot of questions that arose about the physics involved in the Nes. What's the difference between the physics involved in the Nes? I mean, I really didn't go into that, how it works. But the only thing that I was talking about, I want to make clear, was that there's a difference in terms, according to Yad, this is a difference structurally between an ace and between a hashgacha. And the difference is that in hashgacha, what happens is that the individual is really that the individual is in line with the reality of Chachma, whose source is God, and being in line with that source, the physical simply can't affect him. In certain respects, the physical does not affect him, which is a natural phenomenon. It's resultant upon the fact that the universe is created in a way that Chachma is the source of all the physical manifestations. So actually, what it means is that the Hashgacha results from the nature of the structure of the universe. The fact that the universe is constructed in a way, the ultimate reality is the world of ideas, which is behind the physical world. And therefore, when a person is in line with that world, his existence is related to the source of the physical. Therefore, he bypasses many of the effects of the physical world. It's like he's in line with the higher reality. That's a natural result. That's not an ace. An ace means when God interferes with the physical reality and creates a change in that physical reality. Now, we mentioned Avraham, that's what the answer is to the question. Avraham Avinu knew God from the Chachma of the Chachma Sa'olam. He knew God, he understood, he saw God from the Chachma, but he didn't understand God in a way that God would change nature. See, that's why it says Vayitzchak, he left, Alaven Meir Shana Yivolei Vim Sarah Abbas Tishu Shana Tele. So he didn't expect this miracle. This was a new concept. So therefore the Hemim Bar Hashem means that he recognized that his knowledge of God was deficient and he accepted it. And this is the idea of a nace. A nace is a different concept. Now you have really, the pasuk expresses it again in that's the concept of bris. Bris is a different kind of hashgacha. It's a different kind of hashgacha to Klal Yisrael. It's an hashgacha that you see works with nace. That you see with regard to Klal Yisrael. It's a special krisis bris. And that implies that God is something different, teaches us something different about God, that God is a Karas Bris. It doesn't mean that the nation naturally is under the Hashgacha, because it's not a natural phenomenon. By an individual who rises to a higher level, he is naturally under the Hashgacha. Whereas the nation is a special Krisis Bris, which means it's an expression of God's will that this nation should exist, and the nation, the nisim that happen to the nation are not simply because the nation is naturally on a high level. It could be in a high level, low level, whatever. The level makes no difference. It's simply whatever is necessary for the sustenance of this nation will take place. God will interfere with the laws of nature so that this should take place. It's a different type of a...
Even though they're unworthy, right.
Includes ownership as well. Yeah. That's why you had to have a special krisis bris with regard to the tochacha. With regard to the tochacha, that the Jews accepted upon themselves the Torah ba'olo b'shvur, Rashi says. What does it mean, ba'olo b'shvur? It means, Eila divrei bris. It says in the end of the... listen up on the table. Eila divrei bris asher tzivah Hashem es Moshe. It's the end of the Tochon Kisavah. That God commanded Moshe, lichros es b'nei Yisrael b'eretz Moav, milvara bris, aside from the bris asher karasi tam b'chorei. What does it mean? What do you mean, Mavada Bris? There's one Bris. What are the two Brises? So Rashi explains. He says, She kablu aleihem as a Torah ba'ola u'bishvua. Alright? Now, Mavada Bris, Shekara sitam b'chorev, klolos shebetaras kahanim, shenemru b'sinai. Alright? So you see that the klolos are a separate Kabbalah's Bris, a separate Kriis's Bris. Why is it a separate Kriis's Bris? Because it's in a totally different framework. It means that they accepted upon themselves this phenomena of the Ashgacha, and they accepted upon themselves that if they deviate from the way of the Torah, that they'll be subject to an Onesh whose purpose it is to sustain Klal Yisrael. So the onshim and the brachos in the klolos are different than the regular onshim that a person gets during his lifetime. Otherwise, why do you have to special priest's bris for shekabla lemas tara b'ala b'shrua? So you see, there are two separate phenomena. A person who lives as an individual, if he lives in a certain way, if he lives properly, he says under the ashgacha. If he doesn't, so then he's subject to onesh. But that's a personal thing. But there's a separate relationship between God and the nation of Israel, which is in a totally different wavelength. Which means that its purpose and its design is simply to sustain Klal Yisrael. So like it says, V'hoya b'chola osu v'mofes, v'zarach lad olam, that these klolos will be a sign and a wonder for you and for your children, which means that other nations will see certain things that occur to the Jews. And the fact that certain onshim occur was done in order to emphasize the fact that there's a special hashgacha to the nation. There are different purposes in the onshim. Of course, the onshim are only when the Jews deviate, and the brachas are when the Jews live according to their Torah. But it means to say that the Jews had to accept this upon themselves, had to accept this result, that aside from the normal process of schar va'onish, they accepted upon themselves a different schar va'onish, whose purpose it is to sustain Klal Yisrael. Many times in terms of manifestation, to manifest to the nations that this is a special nation. So therefore, oftentimes people have to suffer an onish, which the Jews have to suffer an onish, which they ordinarily would not suffer under the normal under the normal circumstances of schar va'onish. You understand what I mean? There isn't a steer between the two, but what happens is that people, when the nation accepted this upon themselves, so they made themselves vulnerable to a different type of onesh, whose purpose is the sustenance of Klal Yisrael, which means that there are certain cases where an individual might suffer an onesh which would destroy him. And under different circumstances, if it wasn't for that special bris, so then he might not have been destroyed. See, it was a Kabbalah on the part of the nation to accept the results of this special Ashgacha. That's why they had to have a special Kabbalah. It's a different kind of, it's a different phenomenon. In other words, they laid themselves open by this acceptance to suffer a different kind of, the results of a different kind of Ashgacha.
You're answering?
What I'm saying is if God has to make a demonstration of the nation, if God has to make a demonstration of the nation, whether it's for good or whether it's for bad, they're accepting this upon themselves. So it was a different type of that's what it means. Shekiblos Torah ba'olo b'shvua. Now really there were two Kabbalahs of Torah ba'olo b'shvua. One Kabbalah Torah ba'olo b'shvua was the one that was given at Sinai. Why does Rashi have to say it was the one that was given at Sinai? Because otherwise, what does it mean, Milvara Brisa Shekara Sitam Bechore? What does it mean? Matan Torah? Matan Torah is not a bris. Matan Torah was an act of God, which was because of God's chesed, that he gave a nation the true way of life. That's simply chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Baal HaBishruah is a different thing. Baal HaBishruah means that you're making yourself an entity that that serves to demonstrate and serves to sustain this this bris. So the first, so there was two. One bris was the bris of Shekar Sita Machara, which was part of Matan Torah. So Matan Torah wasn't just generosity on the part of God to give people a way of life, but it was more than that. It came with a special priest's bris. And that was the first glowis. Then Moshe Rabbeinu received the tzivui to have a second set. Have a second set of acceptance of the Tochacha. Okay? The first Tochacha was the inherent bris that came with Vatam Tiyulim Amlachas Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. It demanded that there's a special priest's bris that goes along with it. That was the first Tochacha. Then there was a second Tochacha that Moshe Rabbeinu gave. That's Mavara Bris Shekar Tamachorah. But the concept of bris is a different relationship to God. That's the essence of, that's not the most fundamental principle, philosophical principle in Yadus, but it's the fundamental principle of all of Yadus, of all of, you understand what I mean? It's not the most fundamental philosophical principle in Yadus, but it is the most fundamental principle upon which the whole idea of a special Ummah is based. That God is a Karas Bris. As God the Karas Bris, a totally different, concept. That's the essence of the idea of Atem Tiyulim Mamlachas Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. When the Rambam mentions the Rambam talks about the Tochacha. So the Rambam says that it's in the Perek Tes of Hilchos Teshuvah. He says, "Dim azavtem es Hashem ushgisem b'machal u'b'mishte u'znus v'dom alehem." And if you follow till you spend your days in fear, and you won't have a free heart, and you won't have a you won't be physically well, in order that you should be able to do the mitzvahs. Kidei she'tovdu mechai olam haba, v'nimtza she'ibadetem shnei olamos. Yeah. So what happens is that it means that God will prevent you from reaching perfection. Why should God prevent the person from reaching perfection no matter how bad he is? The answer is because that's part of the Krisis Bris. That's the Krisis Bris. That's what we accepted upon ourselves. That if we don't follow the proper way, so then we will lose both olamos. We'll lose both olamos, and that's the bris that we accepted upon ourselves at Har Sinai. It's a different kind of ashgacha. It's a different phenomenon of ashgacha, and in that area the nes comes into the picture. That's when nes comes in. Now let me show you again from Pesukim in the Torah with regard to when Moshe Rabbeinu first. Of course, the bris bin Absalom was a prediction. And it starts to unravel in Shmos. This prediction starts to unravel in Shmos. And you see that when Moshe Rabbeinu was summoned by God to go to the people and to begin the enactment of this bris. So you have an interesting discussion there between Moshe Rabbeinu and God. So the pasuk, it's in Shmos Gimel, starts with pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Hinei Anochi Bo El Bnei Yisrael. V'amarti Lahem Elokei Avoseichem Shlachani Aleichem. So the people will say to me, I will say to the people that the God of your father sent me to you. V'amarli, the people say to me, Ma Shemo. What is his name? What's God's name? Ma'amar Aleichem. What should I answer them? Vayomer Elokim Moshe. So God said to Moshe, Ekye Asher Ekye. Now we'll pronounce it. Shem Hashem. Ekya Asher Ekya. Alright? That's what I told him. I'm saying a kuf instead of a hey. Alright? So, Vayomer, and he said, Ko Soma Livnei Yisrael. This is what you should say to the Jews. Ekya Shlochani Aleichem. So first he said, Ekya Asher Ekya. Then he said, Ekya. And says Vayomer Od Elokim El Moshe Kosam Al Bnei Yisrael Rishem Elokev El Seichem Elokei Avram Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov Shlachani Aleichem Zeh Shmi LeOlam Zeh Zichri LeDor Dor. So the so of course the question the Rambam asks in the Mara, what kind of a question did Moshe ask God? He said, well, if they listen what his name, what will I tell them? So what do you mean? There's a special name that they knew. If they knew the name, so then that's how he knew the name. So what does that prove? And if it was the name that he knew and they didn't know, so he certainly can't prove anything. I'll tell him the name. He'd make up any name he wants. So the Rambam says it's obvious from the Psukim. You see that the when Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, what name shall I tell them? It wasn't a name. It was an idea. It was an idea. Now let's just take a look at the nail. Okay, so therefore it was an idea. But if you take a look at the names which are supposed to reflect the ideas, how many do you find? You find three. Because the first one is Vayoma Lakim Moshe Ekya Asher Ekya. That's the first name. Vayoma Kosam Levin Yisrael Ekya Shlachan Yalechem. Now Ekya is already a change. You said Kosam Levin Yisrael Ekya Asher Ekya Shlachan Yalechem. No, Ekya Shlachan Yalechem. Yes. Then it says, "Vayomer Od Elokim El Moshe, Kosam Al Bnei Yisrael, Hashem Elokev El Seichem Elokei Avram Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov Shlachani Alechem. Zeh Shmi LeOlam, Zeh Zichri LeDor Dor." So now he's telling him a different name, Elokev El Seichem Elokei Avram Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov. But which name is he supposed to the right name? What is he supposed to do? Doesn't seem to make any sense on the surface what the pasuk is going to say. All right. Rashi quotes an interesting chazal. Rashi says when Moshe said Ek Yasher Ek Yeh, so Rashi says it means like this: Eye Imam B'tzora Zo, so I'll be with them in this tzora. Asher Eye Imam B'shibud She'or Malchius, and I will be with them in the future. Asher means I will be with them in the future also. In other situations of Shibud. Amar Lafanav, so Moshe said to God, Ribbono Shel Olam, Ma'ani Maskel Lahem Tzara Acheres? Why should I mention to them another trouble? Dayim B'tzara Zu. It's enough to have this Tzara. Amar Lo, so I said to him, Yafa Amarta. He answered very well. He said very well, Ko Soma, this is what you should say. Okay? It was Moshe's responsibility to refine it. And before Moshe refined it, he consulted God whether that's the proper thing to do. God gave him the major idea. But then he, as a leader, was supposed to adapt this idea. And he the only thing was he consulted with God whether that adaptation is correct. But the pasuk, the Chazal talked to Belashim and the other Chazal. It doesn't mean that, of course, that Moshe Rabbeinu told God something he doesn't know.
According to what you're saying,
so let's try to understand. I mean, I'm going to say a pshat. I can't say I'm certain that this is the pshat. It's a very difficult area. What exactly these words mean? Obviously, they're words that signify something very metaphysical and mystical in the sense that mystical in the sense that we don't understand it. Like the Rambam used the word mystery. Mystery means something you don't understand. So it's something very deep and metaphysical. And the Rambam himself in the Mora says that the term Ekya Asher Ekya, the only name of God is the Yud Kei Vav Kei. Is the Yud Kei Vav Kei, tetragrammaton. And he says, why is that considered the name of God? Because every other name of God is really a name that signifies attributes. You say Aleph Dalet, my master, or in plural, or Elohim. You see, the term Elohim is used to mean even Diana. It's used from Aleph Amalach, Kerosi Pnei Elohim Basit Vatirzeni. Yesterday's parsha. So Kisariso Manoshim Vim. So that means with a malach, with a certain mystical force that Yaakov was struggling with. So you see the word that the term aleph lamed really doesn't necessarily imply, I mean, Rashi, I think, says it means multi-powerful. Rashi says it, that's why it's plural. That's why it's plural. It means multi-powerful. So all these terms, even Shaddai, is all the names of God can have inherently in them inherently are partake of anthropomorphism to a certain degree. Inherently, they partake of anthropomorphism. So why are we allowed to use those names? We're allowed to use those names because we understand that it's only a way to convey a certain idea to us in terms of results, but not because inherently they describe God. But the only name that we have that is free from any anthropomorphism is the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. And that term, that's why it says, V'somos Shemi al B'nei Yisrael v'ani avarachem. So Chazal say Shemi, my name. What is my name? My name is Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. That's how you know the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash says Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. That's how you know that he enunciates that. He has the right to enunciate that word. You see? Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Because that is God's name. Why is that God's name? Because it means that all the other names only came into existence, like the Rambam explains, after the creation. In other words, the creation is the creation of the physical universe. We're a part of that universe. And those names only came into existence after the creation of the universe, because they're names that reflect the Creator in human terms. In terms of the physical world, in terms of the world that we know, he says. The other name, the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, is really God's name because it was his name before the creation of the universe, which means it reflects the idea of God's absolute existence. That's what the Rambam says. It reflects the idea, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei reflects the idea of God's absolute existence and does not lend itself to any type of anthropomorphic connotation. Right. Doesn't lend itself to any type of anthropomorphic connotation. That's the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Now, the Ekya Asher Ekya obviously is closely tied to the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. You see that? But I would like to attempt to give an explanation of what it means, even though I say again that I really can't say for certain that I'm right on, that I have any exact knowledge about it, but nevertheless, I think that insofar as a person has the right to try to understand the pasuk, we have a right to attempt to explain what the pasuk means. All right, so given that introduction, let me try to attempt to say pshat. The word, the first part of the word, ekya. It means literally, I will be. I will be. Now, a person, a human being, can never say, I will be. The word, to say, I will be, is an inherent contradiction. Because if you say, I will be, it means that I am not now. So there is no I. So it's an inherent impossibility. Okay. The will be means existence, to exist. So you can't say I will exist. It's an impossibility, because if you don't exist now, then there's no I. And if you do exist now, so then you will not. You can't say you will be. You are. So the word itself is an impossible thing for a creature that exists in time and space it's an impossible expression for him to be true about him, for him to say. It's impossible to make sure to express such an idea. So therefore the statement is inherently illogical. Alright, for a human being to say.
The only problem is that.
So what does it mean in relation to God?
So
I say that what it means like this, that God is saying, when God says will be, he means that his existence will enter the realm of time. That's what I say it means. It means his existence will enter the realm of time and space. That's what it means. Now God, therefore, I will be means, see, there are two types of existences. There's an existence that we have, which is in the realm of time and space, and then there's God's existence, which is outside the realm of time and space. So when God says, I will be, he means I will be, means I will be existing in terms of time and space. Now, let me just, before I go any further, it does not mean that God is going to change his existence, that his existence is subject to time and space. But it means he will enter that realm of time and space, that man will see that God's existence at a certain time, at a certain time and space system, certain point in time and space. You see. Now, what's the implication? What is meant that God will enter the realm of time and space, so to speak? And literally, of course, it doesn't mean that. It means that his existence will be manifest to man as entering at a certain point in time and space. What that means is a miracle. That's what it means. It means a miracle. Of course, a miracle means that God changes a certain law of nature. Now, to change a certain law of nature means that God enters, so to speak, the time-space system. Do you understand what I mean? Well, maybe it'll be clearer if I give the fact, so then I won't have to go into a description of it. What it means is this. God created the universe. God created the universe. The universe is a direct result of God's creation. Okay? But changing the law in the universe means that God intervenes at a certain point in an established entity of time and space, which means he breaks into time and into the realm of time and space, so to speak. That's what I mean to say. You understand?
Kriyas Yamsuf had to take place at a certain time in a certain place.
Exactly. It means,
and that wouldn't have happened unless God intervened in time and space realm.
Exactly. In creation of the universe, God doesn't enter time and space. The creation of the universe is a time-space phenomenon. And it's a phenomenon which results from God. But when God changes something at a certain point through a miracle, it means he's entering that realm of time and space at a certain point. You see? That's what I mean to say. It's easy for me to tell you exactly what I'm saying to give a description of it. Bria Solom is not God entering time and space. It's a result of God that the universe is created. It's a result of God the universe created. It has nothing to do with God entering time and space. No, it stems from God's essence. The universe is, I mean, everything we use descriptive. That's why I have to be careful. It's like a spinoff of God's essence. See? But he is not in the universe. He's not in the universe. That's why we say Ayei Mekom Kavodo, Hu Mekom Baruch Hashem Mekomo. That's the idea that you mentioned in Kedusha. Hu Mekomo Shel Olam, the Ein Olam Mekomo. He is the place of the universe. The universe is not his place, because the universe, time, especially in the light of modern science, I mean, in light of relativity, this idea that the Rambam mentions in the Gemara has assumed proportions where even physicists have to reckon with it. That time and space are attributes of matter. They're not separate existences, as people previously thought. So the whole universe, really, with space and time, is one phenomena, which results from God. But a miracle, by a miracle, the idea of a miracle means so to speak. I mean, again, you can't get away from the anthropomorphism because that's our nature, but it means that, so to speak, in human terms, that God enters the time-space realm and at a certain point causes a change in nature. All right? What Levi's asking is the machlokes between the Rambam and the Chazal and how, whether a nes means that God actually intervenes, or whether a nes means it was set up from the beginning of Sheish Yimei Bereishis that this nes should occur at this time. At this time, it reflects the manifestation of God. In other words, it doesn't mean that he actually, in terms of the source, it makes a difference, but in terms of the effect, it's the same thing. Manifested. Okay. Now, that's why I said in the beginning the way people look at it. As I mentioned, in the framework of people, it's as if God is entering the time-space realm. Of course, such a phenomenon is possible, but that's what a nes is, really. It's a different phenomenon than the phenomena of Hashgacha Pratis. It's a totally different phenomenon. That's the pasuk. That's what it means. Now, Ekya, that's what the term Ekya means. Okay? Now, what is Asher Ekya? Asher Ekya means literally that which I will be. Okay? Here again is a statement which seems not to make any sense. I will be that which I will be. What kind of meaning is that? What kind of meaning is that? So, what I think it means is that which I will be reflects the idea that when God says I will be, it means he will intervene at a certain given point. He enters into the realm of space and time, so to speak, insofar as man as the observer sees it, okay? That which I will be means that it is a constancy. It is a constant. It is a constant. That which I will be, that which I will be, which means that is my nature. It is my nature to enter into the time-space realm in order to, for one purpose. What is the purpose? Insofar as Croesus Bris is concerned, insofar as the Jewish nation is concerned. See? Insofar as the existence of Klal Yisrael. So, God says, I will be that which I will be. That which I will be means that is my nature. That is my constant nature. And my ongoing nature. So I will enter the realm of space and time. And that, why? Because that is my eternal nature. It's a part of my eternal nature. It's a part of my eternal nature to enter the realm of space and time for the purpose of Croesus Bris, which means that the fact that God is a Kares Bris is an idea that stems from his eternal nature. You follow? So what he was saying was that how could God enter the realm of space and how could God enter the realm of space and time? How could he be, so to speak, in terms of space and time? Because that is a part of his, that too is a part, it stems from a part of his eternal nature. So that's what Chazal mean. When Chazal say, Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, of course it is true that the reason that the way that God enters, the fact that God enters the realm, so to speak, of space and time stems from his eternal nature. It's not that he actually changes, and Hashem Lo Shinisi, but it means that this is a part of his eternal, unfathomable nature. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if I tell them this, that's not a good idea for me to mention that. Why? Because if I mention that, it will automatically imply that this is a part of his eternal nature, which gives the implication that it's going to happen again. You see? And that implication is not one which they will be able to tolerate emotionally. You understand? So that was the dialogue between God and between Moshe. You understand what I'm saying? If he would tell the Jews that God will enter the realm of space and time now, once, Fine, fine. That's good. But to say that it's a part of my eternal nature, that I always enter the realm of space and time with regard to Klal Yisrael, which means the separate property of God as a Koreis Bris, in which it changes the law of nature, that once I mention that it's a part of his eternal nature, I'm ipso facto, what are they going to hear? They're not going to hear the metaphysical aspect. What they're going to hear is the fact that this is an ongoing process, which means that there's going to be many more tzaras, you see. So that's why, therefore, what Moshe Rabbeinu told God was that you, that the idea, the metaphysical idea, is a very lofty idea, but with it, attending that metaphysical idea is another idea, is the idea that the Jews are going to be in different situations throughout the future, where God will enter, that's his eternal nature, which means it doesn't happen once. So he says, I shouldn't mention that, because that's gonna emotionally, that'll make them depressed. Dial at Sarah B'Shaika. So therefore, he said, therefore God said, Tosom al of Ne'israel, Ek Yeshua Hani Aleva. Don't mention that, the extension. Okay? We're talking about people who are in a state of shibud, that they're completely depressed and in a state of pain, constant pain. Now is not the time to mention that this is a constant, ongoing process. You don't introduce this idea in a way that you're going to harm their emotions. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu, see, so God conveyed to Moshe in this Nevuah. I mean, I want you to understand something. It's not... Later they were able to accept the Kriyas Bris. But first in his definition, I will be a person. It's a finite, fixed entity. With relationship to God, you can't say, I will be a finite, fixed entity. I will be what? That which I will be, which is the abstract, my abstract eternal nature. Undefinable. I will be what? That which I will be, which means that it's a part of my undefinable nature. That's the term. That's what the term means. It means it's a part of God's undefinable essence. So it means to say that it's... That's the whole idea of the pasuk, is that there is no direct object to I will be. I will be what? There is no direct object. The person can say I will be a person. There's a certain finite description. There's a direct object. In relationship to God, there is no direct object. So in relationship to God, it's that which I will be. It means it's a part of my eternal nature. Which means to say that the breaking into the realm of time and space is a result of God's eternal nature. It's a result of God's eternal nature. You understand what I mean? The point that she's making is a good point. I mean, there's two senses to the word will be. In one sense, the word will be means will relate to time and space. And in the other sense, it reflects God's true existence. Will be, you see, it reflects God's true existence. So, at any rate, the point I want to make is that this, I'm pretty sure that this is what the idea that the way Chazal learned the pasuk. Because you see, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, in other words, what I want to make clear is like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu in this Nevuah received a very deep metaphysical idea in relationship to God's nature, how all this is possible, because this presents tremendous philosophical problems. What does it mean? I mean, philosophers talk about this. How could God, so to speak, enter the realm of time and space? What is meant by this type of an idea? You see, of course, the pasuk says it has to do with God's eternal, undefinable essence. So Moshe Rabbeinu received these ideas and understood these ideas in this Marei HaNevuah. But he was supposed to adapt part of that Marei HaNevuah and present it to the people. So that's why he told God that in the presentation of that idea, he's not going to attach the idea of God's eternity in relationship to this concept, because that will emotionally turn the people off. Moshe Rabbeinu had a responsibility to act as a leader, not just as a metaphysician, but as a leader. And as a leader, he had to adapt that idea. But nevertheless, The idea is even without the Asher Ekya, is obviously an abstract idea in relationship to God's nature, because it means that God, while he is outside the realm of time and space, nevertheless, okay? Now, so the first thing that Moshe Rabbeinu was to convey was an abstract idea in relationship to God. I mean, we can't demand too much exactness of it. This is a difficult area. I think I've been able to shed some light on what the concept is. I can't answer every single particular in the area. I think it's important that we can break open at least draw the basic lines here. One second. Now. Therefore, you see that Moshe Rabbeinu conveyed to the people an abstract idea in relationship to God's essence. It was an idea that had to do with, it was the same idea, I mean, you can't ask me questions if it's the same idea, second idea. No, these ideas are on different levels, but it's in the same area as the idea of V'hamin bar Hashem v'yachshaveh lo tzedakah. That idea, the idea that God, who is the source of the universe, nevertheless, and who is outside the realm of time, that we do not believe that God is in the realm. Nevertheless, with regard to Nisan, God, so to speak, enters the realm of time and space. I say so to speak because that's the way it seems to us, an impossibility. But the truth of the matter is that it has to do with God's nature. It has to do with God's essence, which we can't comprehend. We can't comprehend that. The higher, the greater a person is, the more he can comprehend. Okay? Now, so that was the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu conveyed. But then, that takes care of two of the shemos. But there's a third shem. Vayoma oda l'kim el Moshe. Ko soma al b'nei Yisrael al Hashem al akev al seichem al akev avram al akev yitzhak al ve'yakov shlachani aleichem. Why does he say that? The answer is precisely because of what we're saying. In explaining to the people the abstract idea, the end result for man in pondering the abstract nature of God is that he simply gets lost. He simply can never have anything that he can, any substance that he can hang on to, that he could use to relate to, because it's totally abstract. So while Moshe Rabbeinu was explaining an abstract metaphysical principle, it was one which left the people, the Zakenim, this is supposed to tell the Zakenim, left the Zakenim with the unidentifiable, unknowable idea of God. So therefore, what happens is they have nothing, there's nothing tangible, so to speak, and the person needs something tangible to relate to. So that's why God said, Vayomer O Devokim El Moshe, Kosom Al Bnei Yisrael, Arashem Elokei Avoseichem, the God of your fathers, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, the God of the Ashgacha, the one who gave his Ashgacha to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, he is the one that sent me. Which means to say, how, in what tangible way can we relate to God? There is a tangible way. His essence is unknowable. But there is a tangible way. The tangible way is through the manifestation of his Ashgacha to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So that's why you had to have the, that's why God had to add Vayomer Od Elokim El Moshe, because if you remain with the first Ekya Asher Ekya, so then there would be no way for the people. The people would be, they'd be very, very nice philosophical discourse, but there's no way. The end result is that there is nothing that a person can sense he relates to. Who does he relate to? There's no way. There has to be some bridge, some way for a person who is a bus or a dumb to relate to God. Where is the bridge? The answer is, where is the bridge? The bridge is at Hashem Elokei Avoseichem, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. We relate to God through the manifestation of his Ashgacha to the Avos. That's the way that's the relationship. Then the pasuk concludes, Zeshmi la'olam, the Zeh Zichri L'Dor Dor. La'olam, so the Pasuk, so Chazal say La'olam is without a Vav. La'alein Ksiv. La'alein means hidden. Zeh Shmi La'olam is referring to what? The Yud Kei Vav Kei. The Zeh Zichri L'Dor Dor is referring to? Is referring to the Kei Vav Sechem, Kei Avon, Kei Tzor, Kei Yaakov. is that's why the Gemara says, Lo kamoshani nichtav ani nikra. I'm not read the way I am written. I am written with yud kei vav kei, which means a totally abstract idea, but I'm read with the adni. Aleph Dalgun means that my master means in human terms. So really, what was the message that Moshe Rabbeinu? Let's just take a look at what was the message that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the people. What was the message? The message was that Moshe Rabbeinu presented the people with a new religion, with a different religion, a type of religion that was never heard of before and has never been heard of since, which is basically the idea that God's nature is so abstract that man cannot relate to him. You see? Nevertheless, man is permitted to relate to him in a certain way, in human terms. He's permitted to relate to him in human terms. In terms of how? Elokei Avosechem, the God of the earth. Who is God? How do we relate to God? Who is God? God of the Avos. That is our closest relationship to God. Any other image or idea or feeling or sense behind the word God, you see, is really usher. Is usher. And it borders on Avodah Zarah. It was really, in this message, what Moshe Rabbeinu did in these few statements was he established the essence of a new religion. A religion in which the person does relate to God on his emotional level, you see. But simultaneously, while he's relating to God that way, there is the intellectual cognition of the fact that there is no way that he can relate to God. You see? In other words, he relates to God in a double framework. He recognizes that God exists and he has to relate to him. But his nature prevents him from really relating to his essence, because his essence is too abstract. So the Zeh Shemi La'olam, he can't relate to. Only Zeh Zichri L'Dor Dor. But nevertheless, in the Zeh Zichri L'Dor Dor, you see, I mean, it still is a degradation. That's just a result of God's infinite essence. What's the answer? The answer is because we have the Zeh Shemi L'Olam. Because we have the Zeh Shemi L'Olam, because it's a duality. We relate to God in a dual manner. We relate to God, we know there's an abstract essence, but an abstract essence does not permit us to relate to Him. You're allowed to relate to Him through Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. If you just had Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, you would start imagining a certain type of you'd project onto God certain anthropomorphic phenomena, which is not true. So you remember the way the Yishem Hashem is written. Yishem Hashem is written Yud Kei Vav Kei, which means to say that His essence is beyond. But we are permitted to say Zeh Zichri L'Dor Dor. That was the new idea that Moshe Rabbeinu received in this Nevuah, and that was the central idea of the new religion that Moshe Rabbeinu established. That is the central idea. Zeh Shmi La'olam v'zeh Zichri L'Dor Dor, the two names of God. That's the essence of Yahad Israel. And that was the message they received, and that was the message they went to the people with. Okay? You can't be one without the other. It can't. Even though you see the Zakenim, what level were the Zakenim on? Even though they were really, the Ummah was steeped in Memtes Shari Tuma, they were on a level to appreciate this idea and to recognize that this is the truth, that this is the true idea of God. They recognize that. That's how we move. By this idea, he showed they recognized the truth of the idea. They saw it had to be so, and then they followed Moshe because he was the man who had the knowledge. Yes, man is incapable of putting God in his framework. He's incapable of putting God in his human framework. The only framework that he approaches God is that way he approaches God. No, it's the only way that it can fit into his mental framework. And it's permissible, provided he knows that the Zeshmi Lolam is there. If he doesn't know the Zeshmi Lolam is there, he can't do it.
It's not one track.
The matir for the Leke Avram, Leke Ezra, Leke Yaakov, for Ze Zichri Lador Dor, is the Zeshmi Lolam. You have to have both. That was the message. The only autonomous existence is God. There's nothing else that is autonomous. A malach is not autonomous. So therefore, to pray to a malach would imply the malach has autonomy, which is avodah zarah.
When you speak about
it, I would say that it's an adjective. Elokei Avraham is an adjective. It's an adjective which is in danger of becoming a noun in the wrong manner. That's why you have to have the zeshmi lolo. But what I mentioned this parsha over here now is to show you the idea. That's really the idea that Chazal say that Ekya Asher Ekya, that the idea of God insofar as performing miracles is concerned for Klal Yisrael is a different idea, and that's the idea in Ekya. Different than Hashgacha Prati, so it's a different phenomenon altogether. I would add one point. The question is, the people who ask me the same question, they say, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu had to convey this idea to the nation when the idea already was in existence in Avraham, the time of Avraham Avinu? The answer is, of course, Avraham Avinu received the idea. But the nation disintegrated to the point, in relation to that idea, to the point that they were only capable of having Moshe Rabbeinu re-uncover for them, rediscover for them the idea. Of course, once he explained it to them and he rediscovered it for them, then they understood what the concept was in the Bris Bein Absarim. It was something that was with the nation, the Masorah was with the nation, but it was so to speak in a dormant type of potential existence. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu came along and he unraveled it, and that he awakened it. As a matter of fact, that's what gave them the conviction. If it was something totally new, you see, so then they wouldn't have any conviction. And if it was something that they knew before, they wouldn't follow Moshe. The answer is, what was the process that Moshe Rabbeinu used? That's what it was a process of unraveling. Moshe Rabbeinu showed them, he unraveled before them the Masorah that they had from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and he showed them how every point in the Masorah stands out. This Masorah that you have among the nation, which you don't understand, I'll explain to you, I'll show you precisely what it means. Once they saw that, and they saw it goes back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they saw that this idea was lingered among the nation, was carried down, but they didn't understand it. Moshe Rabbeinu unraveled it for them, and rediscovered it, and showed them exactly how it works and what it means. That's when they had conviction to follow Moshe Rabbeinu. Otherwise, there'd be no other way that they'd have conviction. As a matter of fact, there is a Rambam in the Ashmata. You know that Rambam. The end of the Hilchos Melacha. So the one verse in the Rambam that was taken out is where the Rambam mentions about Yeshu. And he mentions about the Goyim and he knocks them apart, so they took it out. But his question, yes, he says that what was the purpose? What's the purpose of having these goyim? He says because the goyim, he says, if the goyim didn't accept the Torah, and they didn't, of course they couldn't accept the Torah straight, but they took it and distorted it. But at least he says the whole world recognizes the Torah. Our world recognizes this. Now when Mashiach comes, the Mashiach shows them exactly what it is, so then they're ready to accept it because they have it. Even if they didn't have the Torah itself, there was no Torah, so then how could the world possibly accept it? Liyasha Derech Mashiach, he says. So you see, that's how conviction can take place when people have something
foundation.
For foundation, then somebody comes along and explains it to them.
Okay.
So in other words, the point was, how could Moshe Rabbeinu prove that he really was a messenger from God? Apparently, so what about Osos and Mofsim? Apparently, Osos and Mofsim was not enough. That's an interesting thing. Osos and Mofsim was not enough. Why wasn't it enough? He had the Osos. It says, Vayas, for Osos Leinei Om. For the Om, the Osos was enough. But for the Zekanim, in the end, it says, later, it says, Vayelech Moshe v'Aaron v'yasfu es kol ziknei b'nei Yisrael. That's in Hei Choftes. Vayedaber Aaron es kol advorim asher dibur Hashem al Moshe. Who did he speak it to? Who did he speak to? The Zekanim. Vayasa Osos Leinei Om. So the Osos were enough for the Om. But for the Zekanim, he had to have the whole statement of the whole concept of Ekya Asher Ekya, you see. So apparently it was not enough for the Zekanim. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't satisfied, and God wasn't satisfied to have this Zekanim be Mamin through the Osos. That was for Leinei Om. Why wasn't the Osos enough? The answer is because, like the Rambam says, because Hamamin al pi ha'os yesh belibo dofi. Person that believes by a miracle, there really is something. This is not the full level of the emunas adam. Doesn't involve the entire man. It's only something which is an extraneous thing. He has to go by it, but it doesn't move the inner man. What moves the inner man? Only the ideas. So that's why there's a Zekanim who are capable of the ideas, so therefore he had to convince them through ideas. It's so beautiful where the pasuk works out. Because really you have the Osos, and then he asks God, what do we need it for? What's wrong with the Osos? So the answer is because the one was a conceptual conviction that he was able to convey to this Zekanim to show them the ideas. That's really a level of conviction. Leinei on for the Haman, he had to do the miracle. They weren't on a level to understand the idea. But the idea, what was the proof for the, this, we never went into this before, but that's very important. What was the proof for the Zekanim? The proof for the Zekanim was, how did it work? There was a Mesorah among Klal Yisrael, there was a Mesorah among the nation, which they didn't understand, and he explained to them and showed to them precisely what the meaning of that Mesorah was. Once they saw that he is the man that understands the secret of the Mesorah, then they followed him. That was their that was the Ekya Asher Ekya. If you think about it, it's an unbelievable thing. I mean, how could a man prove without using Osos? How could he prove that he's the one that's sent by God through ideas? The answer is, the only way he could do it is by showing them exactly what the meaning of that Mesorah that they had among the nation was. That was the way he did it. He was a Rebbe. He taught them the Mesorah. Explained to them the Mesorah. In other words, they were on the level where they would follow a man who has the true Chachmas Elokim. They were on that level. They had to be on the level where they'd follow Chachmas Elokim. Otherwise, they're not on a level. That level they were on, that they'd follow the man that has Chachmas Elokim. And then they saw in Moshe Rabbeinu how he unraveled and explained the Mesorah to them, that this is the man we have to follow. He's the one that has Chachmas Elokim. And I mentioned last week that the Rambam has a similar idea of an Hashmatas Rambam, of a proof that the Mashiach will use for the world. A person who just goes to a physician, he follows a doctor because he knows medical science, he sees people being cured. That's a factual type of conviction. That is not a real conviction. It's not the whole man that is convinced. Because since the essence of man is his mind, and his mind doesn't understand the prescription of the doctor, so he really is lacking conviction. Only a person who understands medicine has total conviction, because he really sees with his mind how it works. That's when the man is totally satisfied intellectually. See? And that's the only real conviction, and that's the only real type of human conviction. And that's the type that Yadus ultimately demands. And that's the and that's really Sinai. That's really the Rambam and the Perek Ches and Sinai. It all ties in. All the same idea.